everyone. Thank you for tuning in to episode 22 of the Crystal Habit Podcast. Like always, I'm your host, Megan Marie. So from the next couple of months, we're actually going to kick off a special series of podcasts that address one of the most frequently asked questions most of us get in the studio, which is how to get your start in the game industry. From here on out, each episode is going to give you tips and advice for a specific vocation. So what should you have in your art portfolio versus your animation portfolio, and what you should be submitting if you're a programmer. To kick off the feature, we're actually going to start this episode with an overview of the industry and sort of general advice and best practices from veterans at the studio. We'll also talk to our recruiting lead about the do's and don'ts of submitting a resume and so forth. I hope you enjoy the episode and find it extra useful. Remember, we're doing this podcast series for you guys. So if you have any specific questions you want us to tackle in subsequent podcasts, send your questions to community@crystald.com. I have three, well, Rich, you've been on the podcast before, but I have two new faces, but really voices on the podcast. In addition to Rich, we have Rich Briggs. Hello, Rich.
Hello. How is everyone doing?
I'm sure if they could answer you, they would say very well, because they're excited to get all this industry advice. We also have Alex Offerman, who's a senior producer here, and Fred Diekman, who's also who is a senior designer. So we've not had either you, Fred, or Alex on the show. Thank you for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
You're welcome.
All right, so we're going to start going around our big conference table and just have you guys first introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your position and what it means, what you do here, and then dive just a little bit into your education and how you broke into the industry. Now, that sounds like a lot. It kind of is, but this is the sort of anecdotal stuff that's really helpful to people. So let's start with you, Rich.
Well, hello. My name is Rich Briggs. I am the brand director here at Crystal. And that means that I get to manage a very talented group of people. And together, we work with Square Enix, our publisher, and I guess you'd say almost our owner, our parent company, to pull together the marketing strategy, the PR. We work with them on all of the sales promotions. And in general, anything that has to do with marketing or creating any of the trailers or other marketing collateral that you would see whenever we launch a game. But we also like to think of ourselves as the stewards of the brand, which means that hopefully we make sure that Lara Croft and Tomb Raider or anything else that we do are being treated with the utmost respect and being presented in the best light at all possible times.
Right.
In terms of my education, I went to college and got a bachelor's in marketing. I knew that I wanted to be in the industry ever since I was a little kid. I started playing games when I was 5 years old on my Atari 2600. And I also knew that I was not very technically oriented. I'm usually the least technically inclined person in any given conversation. So I figured that the best way that I could contribute to the industry and make my mark was to contribute on the marketing side, because one thing that I could always do was try and convince people that I was right or that they should do what I asked them to do. So after I got my marketing degree, I actually cold called Sega. I had always had a lot of respect for them and had very fond memories of my Master System, my Genesis, my Sega CD, etc. And it turned out that they were just about to open up a position in their marketing group for a junior product manager. And I was able to convince them to fly me out. I was in D.C. at the time, and as many of you know, they were in San Francisco. And based on a few things, which I can talk about later in terms of how to break in and how to set yourself up, I convinced them to give me an interview. It went well, and my first day on the job was actually at E3. So
nice.
I got hired, cool. And they said, can you fly down to LA tomorrow and meet everybody that you'd be working with and do some competitive analysis for us? So I had one could say I had possibly the best first day in the industry ever.
Yeah, pretty big deal. So how many years then have you been in the industry, and what other positions have you done since then?
I have been here now, goodness, it's going on 15 years. I was at Sega for 3.5, and then I was at Electronic Arts, including the Visceral Games label, for 9.5 years. Mm. And then I've been here at Crystal almost a year. How's my math? Is that 14 years?
I'm doing my own. I'm trying to.
Yeah, I'm seeing fingers being counted.
I'm seeing 9.5 plus 3.5. That's 13. Yeah, 14. Okay, so 14 years. And I've actually held a variety of positions. I started off in marketing, as I said, at Sega, and was always on the marketing side there. But luckily at EA, I was able to start in marketing, working on franchises like The Sims, Battlefield, a couple little more niche titles like Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath,
very cool.
Time Splitters. And then I moved over onto the production side, worked on Dead Space 1 and 2. And then went into the biz dev and third party marketing side over at Origin. So, and now I'm back as marketing. I've come full circle here at Crystal. So, I've had a couple different things that I've done in the industry.
Great. All right. So next up, we have Alex. Then go.
Hello, my name is Alex Offerman. I'm a senior producer here at Crystal, and I'm now lead producer on an unannounced IP.
Exciting.
For most of my I've been here about 3 years, and that most of that time was on Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, a senior producer. My job is to run the production staff on a project, and the production staff supports all the other teams. We help plan, organize, schedule, and we do anything that needs to get done that no one else wants to do. So, I think the best producers are people that realize that if they need to take the trash out because the trash is overflowing, they will. If we need to set up fans to get some air conditioning going in the office on the weekend, if the air conditioning wasn't scheduled to be on, we make sure it happens. So we try to be the grease in the gears and try to make sure that things are getting done in a productive manner as much as possible. And then sometimes we have to drive things. Sometimes when things are falling behind, we have to be kind of the task masters mm-hmm. and push things forward. And sometimes we have to be the done mothers when things aren't going well or we have to deal with issues. It's pretty much a jack of all trades kind of job.
Definitely seems like it. I thought you were using a metaphor when you said take the trash out at first. I was like, no, they actually mean.
No, I mean, you know, there's
take the trash out. Make sure that it's a happy, healthy environment.
The Friday night meal is in the garbage, and on Sunday morning it doesn't smell very good. And
yeah,
so
it's still there.
It's time to take the trash out.
Okay. So, how about education and previous experience?
So, my education's a little bit disconnected from what I do. I have a degree in Japanese studies from UC San Diego. I was actually in Japan studying for a year at Sophia University and would, instead of spending money and going out on the town on some nights, because it's very easy to spend a lot of money in Tokyo, I would say, okay, I'm going to stay home tonight and do something on my computer and learn something. And this is back quite a while ago. It was like a Power Mac 66 hertz or something. And I downloaded, this is a true story, I downloaded a 3D HTML file of a chair, and so I was able to render this chair in 3D and fly around it, and I was like, this is the coolest thing. I want to do this. And I'd always been a big gamer, and I used to hang out at a gaming company that my friend worked at. So I called that friend. He worked at a small company in San Francisco called PF Magic, and said, hey, you know, I have a degree in Japanese studies, or I'm going to have one. What can I do to get into, it was kind of called multimedia at the time, or video games. And he said, give me a little while, I'll call you back. And he called me back about a week later and said, hey, I've got my producer on the line, and he'd like to talk to you. And I was like, sure. And then this producer got on the line. And he said, hey, I hear you're smart, and you know about computers, and you know about games, and you're really good at games, because I routinely go to their game company and beat everyone at their games.
Yeah.
And he said, would you like to come here and have a job? And I said, sure, I'll take some time off school and do that. So I took a year off from UC San Diego and worked at this company. And this company is known for doing cats and dogs, which is now owned by Ubisoft, but it's your pet shop, or desktop pets.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were working on a game that was very much like Tomb Raider, called Velocity, which never came out. It was a PS1 PC game.
Okay.
And when Tomb Raider came out and we looked at it, we said, we can't we're not going to be able to beat this. And the project was canceled, and that's when I went back to UC San Diego and finished my degree.
And little did you know that later on you'd be working on Tomb Raider.
So part of me always wanted to work on Tomb Raider, and so when the opportunity came up, I was like, absolutely, I need to go finish that game I started, 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And so any other positions along the way, I would assume?
Yeah. So I started as an assistant producer. I did some localization at that first company and then just supported the teams. And then after I graduated from college, I went to Mattel, where one of the lead designer from that team went to work, and we did Hot Wheels games. I did the first Hot Wheels game there, and I even did a Barbie game, I will admit to. And then after that, I went to Treyarch, mm-hmm. that got bought by Activision. And then after that, I went to Midway Games in Chicago and did a game called PsyOps and a game called Stranglehold. Cool. And then I came back to San Francisco and did to work at Ubisoft for a couple years. And I guess the most notable game I did there was TMNT Smash Up. And then I came here to Crystal Dynamics. So it's been about 16 years.
Wow. Yeah. See, I told you we were getting vets. It's awesome. Okay, great. How about you, Fred?
Hi, I'm Fred Diekman. I'm a senior designer on the same project that Alex is on. So that's kind of fun. I've been in the industry for, 18 years now.
Winner. He wins.
Number one. Let me see. I get to design all the stuff that everybody gets to play with, and mm-hmm. so that's fun. I know I can't say more than enough about it. It's a lot of fun. It's also really hard because half the stuff you do, everybody hates the first time you.
So
all they do is complain. Best part is when everybody is quiet, you've done your job. So
when it falls into place.
Yeah. When it falls in place, no one else is complaining about it. You're like, sweet, it's
great.
Done.
Great. All right. So how about education and how you got your start in the industry?
Education wise, I actually was a administration of justice major. I was actually going into the police academy training when I broke my ankle the week before.
Oh no!
I was supposed to go in, and so I had to get a summer job because I couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And turned out Electronic Arts was hiring, so I got my start there. And I started at the bottom of the bottom. So I started on the phones doing tech support.
Okay.
And worked my way up from there. But I've always had an interest in games. I wrote my first game on a TRS-80 when I was in fifth grade.
Wow.
Did my first actual graphical adventure game the next year on the same TRS-80. And then I started writing games on the Apple IIe. And just ever since then, I've always had a really big interest in games.
So you had a portfolio at like age 10?
Yeah, pretty much.
You go pitch yourself to companies?
Yeah. I actually was the kid in fifth grade who would come with a printout of my game I was trying to debug it at lunch. I'd sit there and go, oh, here's the bug. Okay, here's the thing. So I used to do that, which I look back, I'm surprised I never got beat up.
Now you'd be like the coolest kid on the block.
Oh yeah, it's great.
You came to school and you've been designing your own games in elementary school.
I'd say the best story I have is I remember when I was 16 and still really playing a lot of games, and my uncle told me one day, you're never going to do anything with games. Because at the time there was no schooling or education for it. And the best was when my sister got married, he came into the Bay Area and his grandson came with him and got to come to my house. And he walked in. I said, oh, yeah, by the way, this is the house video games bought. And I said, don't ever listen to a thing he says. And suddenly I became the coolest uncle ever.
Yeah. So I can totally see that happening.
So
how about the road in between then and here then? So different companies you worked at?
Actually, I worked at EA for 16 and a half years.
Oh, wow.
I did everything from, I did the phones, QA, testing. I was a assistant producer, associate producer, a designer. I was a technical artist, and then a designer again. I've worked on everything from, I worked on The Sims. I actually worked with Rich on The Sims console.
Very cool.
Racing games, boxing games, golf games, RPGs, third-person action games.
Yeah.
So you name it, I've kind of done it all.
Yeah.
So I'm a jack of all trades, master of none.
Well, you guys have a lot of combined experience. I like this.
I think you are a master of all trades.
Underselling yourself.
There.
All right, so Alex, really quickly, this is something that I wanted to break down for our readers. They have a little bit of our listeners, because so they have a little bit of a better understanding of how studios are structured. So would you mind kind of like a quick top-down approach about how studios in general are run?
Sure. I'll describe Crystal to some degree, but it's been like this at a lot of the studios I've worked at.
Yep.
And this is the dev side, so it doesn't include the brand stuff like Rich, which in this particular studio, they work here. They're really close to us. Studios generally they're usually a studio head. Sometimes he's a general manager, or sometimes he's called studio head. Generally under him are executive producers, so they run a team or multiple teams for in the studio. Under the executive producers, there's usually senior producers, and people report into them. The leads often report into those producers, so you'll have an art lead, design lead, sometimes the or programming lead, and sometimes those leads are called directors. It depends on the size of the team. As the teams get larger, you have those higher level roles. If it's a smaller team, you'll probably just have a lead. So where were we? We're general manager / studio head, executive producer, directors, leads, and then under those you might have senior artists reporting into a lead artist, for instance. So you'll have senior designers, senior animators, senior programmers, and then regular level programmers or mid-level programmers, and then junior guys. Often within a studio structure, there's also an internal QA group.
Yep.
So you'll have a QA manager or QA lead that, and then maybe sub-leads under them, and then depending on the number of QA people, there'll be a number of people reporting into those sub-leads. There's always an IT group because you have the backbone of the studio, IT, facilities, so people that make sure the lights are on and the garbage is taken out when the producers aren't doing it, and sometimes food in the fridge, so we have a lot of snacks here at Crystal. And then you'll have other support staff that do a lot of general activities, from organizing field trips or barbecues.
Like we have one tomorrow. We're excited about that.
We have the company barbecue. But it's fairly hierarchical. In some studios, and actually on the Tomb Raider team, for instance, the leads of the team report directly to the executive producers, and the producers are there on the same level as leads, and they just support the leads and the team. So but generally it's hierarchical. And generally the teams are led by experts in their fields. So even though it's hierarchical, a lot of studios, or most studios now, try to have people a little bit outside of that. And what I mean is, you may one of the mistakes a lot of teams do is they take their best programmer and they make them a lead. But sometimes the best programmer is not necessarily a good manager or lead. So we have principals. So within this structure, there's a principal designer. So this is someone who's really good at design, but maybe they're not someone that doesn't want to lead or doesn't have those skills to be a leader or a manager. And so within that structure and sort of outside that structure, we have principals. We have principal artists. They're just the best artists. We have principal programmers, principal designers, principal animators. And so there's not just that one career path for people. If you want to become an expert in your field, you don't necessarily have to become a lead.
Yeah, because eventually that takes you away from doing the thing that you love and rather managing. So.
Yeah.
Great. I think that provides a good framework for people to understand what we're going to discuss over the next coming months. Okay, so now we're going to start again with Rich. We're going to ask some sort of general questions. What is the best aspect of working in the video game industry, and what is the most challenging aspect? Because even though you work on video games, it is not all fun and games, correct?
Well, it's all games.
Yes.
But it's not always fun and games. You know, for me, I think I think that the best is sometimes also the worst, which is that, as I said, I'm working in an industry that I've wanted to work in since I was 5 years old, and been very passionate about since I was 5 years old. And so the most amazing thing to me is that every day when I wake up, I'm working on making a game or figuring out how to best position that game or how to best communicate what's awesome about that game to all the different fans. And that's a really exciting thing because I get to live my passion every single day. But at the same time, that also can be challenging because I take my job very, very seriously and very, very personally. You know, it's not like I work on something that I don't care about. And so when I walk out the door, I turn it off and I shut down and can just, you know, unplug and enjoy something else. I literally am always thinking about my job. I'm always thinking about games. If I'm playing a game, I'm comparing it in my head. If I see an advertisement, I'm thinking about, oh, what did they do well? What did they not do so well? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does mean that my brain is just hardwired to be always on, which at times can be, you know, a little bit
hard,
a little bit difficult. Yeah, I mean, there was one time recently after we shipped Tomb Raider, and I took my first 2-week vacation in several years, and I remember it was about a week in, and I realized that I had finally just decompressed and wasn't thinking about gaming, and I was like, "Holy cow, is this what people's brains normally are on the weekend?" And so, you know, again, I absolutely love thinking about games all the time. I love working at something that, you know, I'm so passionate about. But it can also be, you know, when you have those little setbacks or when you're doing something all the time and you take it so personally, it's, you know, it's kind of like you're a star athlete, right? Like when you lose that big game, you take it really, really seriously. And that's kind of how I, and I think a lot of people at Crystal feel about our roles here.
I hear this a lot. It's not just a job. It's more of a lifestyle working in this industry. So how about for you, Alex?
I think for me, the best part of working in the industry is the people that you work with. Mm-hmm. My background is a big geek. I played D&D. I don't look like it anymore, but I played D&D and collected comics. And, you know, I feel right at home at Comic-Con, at E3. I mean, it's like these are my peeps. And so I'm with those people every day. So they share a lot of the same interests and hobbies and philosophies. And I've ended up, I started in the industry working with some of my best friends, and they're mm-hmm. still my best friends, and I've made a bunch more best friends at every company I've worked on or worked at. So I think that's the best part for me is the people and who I get to hang out with and work with. And it could be tough because, you know, I'm in a management position, so I can't always, you know, connect with everyone. But it's definitely, you know, we're here a lot. We work very, very hard. And if I didn't like the people I worked with, then it would be much, much more difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're on a team. It's like playing on a team with a bunch of other athletes that you really like, to use Rich's analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of expanding on that analogy, that's also one of the more difficult parts of the industry, is it is really competitive. So you are competing against other games. It's you know, if you're really trying to make the best game out there, you're competing at an Olympic level or all-star level, and that is really, really tough because you can never rest on your laurels. You're always pushing it to be better. When we ship a game, we're never happy with it.
Yeah.
There's always a ton of things we wish we could have improved and make better, and bugs that we wish we could have fixed, little things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's true of artists. They look at it and they go, "Oh, it's really hard." It's true of it. Designers, programmers, everyone looks at their own game and goes like, "Oh, like, I can't believe we didn't fix that or, you know, tweak that or improve that." And
perfectionist,
and it's hard. The top athletes always push themselves as hard as they can. They push themselves to the breaking point, and it's the ones that sort of survive and and keep going that win. So it's challenging.
And how about for you, Fred?
I have to agree with him. The people are a lot of fun to work with, but I will specify my answer towards my role. I think one of the best things, honestly, is when the team can see the vision and everybody kind of actually come, and it finally comes alive, and you realize we have a game.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best things, because you kind of can feel it, and you kind of feel like, okay, it's going, it's moving forward. And some of the best games I've ever played, and I've talked to the people who've made them, come from the hardest challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So the games that kind of feel kind of meh, usually probably the people felt meh the whole time. The ones where people just push hard, you know, Tomb Raider's one of them. You feel it at the end. Like, when you play it, you almost can feel the joy of everybody on the team that we did it, we got it through. And that right there is when you finally finish that game and it feels good and it's exactly how everybody wanted it to happen. That is an awesome feeling.
Great. And how about challenge? What's the biggest challenge?
Everything we do. one of my favorite sayings I've been saying to a lot of the designers I work with is, one of the biggest challenges, it's really easy to get complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complicated to become easy.
Yeah.
And what that means is, usually when you're designing something, it is so simple to make this design get so big, complicated, just convoluted, no one gets it, doesn't work. Getting to that simple, it should be this.
Yeah.
When you finally hit that point, you're like, and everybody kind of looks at each other and go, oh, yeah, that's what we should
aha
be doing.
Moment.
The aha moment is incredibly hard to get to. I mean, if anybody could do it right off the bat, they would be probably the best designer in the entire universe. I've yet to meet someone who can do that.
Next up then, Rich, what skills do you think cannot be taught in we'll get to this, we'll get dive deeper into the experience versus education in the community comments, but what skills do you think can't be taught necessarily in a curriculum that you find really important to working in this industry or even your specific job?
Well, I think it depends on what position you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously there are some things that, you know, you just kind of pick up along the way. There are some things that you may have a natural talent for that would actually make you well suited for a certain role. But in general, regardless of how many classes you take, you know, and I know there are even classes that are dedicated to this, I think working together with people and collaborating is something that, you know, usually you either have that in you or at least a propensity to do that, mm-hmm. or you don't. And you can absolutely develop it, but, you know, making a game is a team effort. And yeah, there are superstars in the industry that may get, you know, a little bit more of the spotlight, and you might attribute a success of a game to their vision, and that may in fact be the case. But regardless of what your role is and how much vision you have, nobody builds a game by themselves. And just being able to listen, be open to other people's ideas, being able to communicate your own ideas, being able to argue for your ideas, knowing when your ideas, you know, maybe aren't the best ones, being able to try new things with people, whatever it is, I think it all comes down to being successful as a team means that you have a bunch of individuals that know how to work together well. Yeah.
So even if you are a superstar at a specific thing, whether it's art or animation, you should make sure that you're out there and collaborating and working with others to ensure that you have that in your repertoire.
Absolutely.
All right. How about you, Alex?
I would have given a very similar, or I will give a very similar answer, and I'll kind of expand upon it since I keep doing that with Rich's answers. I totally agree. It's that ability to work with other people is really, really important. And we are teams now. The it used to be, when I started, there were much, much smaller teams, and now they've grown to, you know, 40, 80, 100, 300, you know.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to work together. You have to be able to work as a team. So I'll just kind of go into sort of a production. So one of the things we look for on production is you do have superstars. You have people who are extremely talented. They may be someone who's an amazing character artist or amazing concept artist. But if they have to work on a team, then they need to be the type of people who can at least collaborate. And that often comes down to how positive they are. So I'll say that one of the things you can't get from a curriculum is the ability to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone who's negative, someone who's just has a bad attitude and doesn't work well with others is poison on a team. They become the weak link. They become someone that brings everyone around them down. So if you're the type of person who doesn't get along with others,
Fred's pointing to himself. I have a feeling that's not true.
That's not true. If you're the type of person who likes to collaborate and you have the talents, then this is a good industry because you're going to be working on a team, and it's really important that you stay positive. And there's a lot of times on the project where things are hard. Like Fred was saying, there's a lot of times you build something, you spend a lot of time working on something, and it gets put in front of people, whether it's people on the team, people outside of the team, user research, and they just go, you know, this isn't very good, or I don't like this. And you have to be able to take that feedback, go back and start over or rebuild what you were doing and stay positive, because if you get negative, it's only going to hurt yourself. So
your ability to take criticism is also very important.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You almost never get it right the first time. Well, it's often collaborative and iterative. Yeah. Iterative.
Well, and I think both of those things, if I could, you know, just what you were saying made me think of one other element. Both of those stem from passion, I think.
Yep.
And, you know, if you love what you're doing and you feel like you are, you know, I mentioned earlier, I feel like I'm living my, you know, sort of my dream.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes it a lot easier to work with other people because you can find that shared passion, right? Mm-hmm. You can take negativity and be positive. If you say, okay, this person isn't, you know, rejecting my idea because they think I'm stupid or because they think they're better than me, or most of the time they're not, you know, with Diekman, you never know, but
just stay in the truth.
Yeah. Just calm like a sea, partner. But, you know, you think, okay, they're actually doing this because they're just as passionate about what they're doing as I am. And so if we can find a way to harness both of our passion and meet in the middle, or maybe I argue my point, or maybe he argues his, and, you know, we agree, okay, I concede your point, or you concede to mine. Whatever it is, if it's coming from a place of we're just working to try and make this the best possible thing that we can, whether it's a trailer or a game feature or whatever it is, you know, if you've got that passion in you, then I think, you know, to your point, Alex, you can be passionate and you can be positive and you can see the people around you, you know, whether you're a superstar or whether you're just getting your start, you can see them as sharing that passion and working together in a team. So, you know, I would say that in addition to, you know, to that idea of wanting to work together with people, don't jump in if you don't really love it. You know, don't try and join the industry just because you think it's your ticket to being cool, because there's a lot of people that are in the industry right now, and it's that passion and that positivity that's going to actually let you be a success.
Great. How about you, Fred?
I'm going to go against the team right now and give a different answer. No, I actually was going to say something very, very, very similar, but because they both reiterated it.
Yeah, it reinforces it. This is very
important. I don't need to do that now. So my main thing that I think is critical thinking and really understanding what the issues are.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy for people to say, this sucks.
Yeah.
You can't fix that.
Yeah.
So you really have to be able to articulate what is bad, but that means seeing beyond what's just on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like what is it that's actually wrong? Understanding that and be able to get to that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a skill that they really can't teach.
Yeah.
Like I've seen people come out of school and it takes them a long time to understand. And you have to, like, you'll sit with them and go, no, here's what's actually wrong. And it's not what's on the screen. You have to understand how the game works, how this is working. And all that to figure out, oh, here's what's actually wrong. And that also comes back into kind of what Rich Alex was saying about. It also happens in feedback you get.
Yeah.
Sometimes someone will say, this is bad. And you have to take it for a second and look at it and then read between the lines. You're like, oh, no, what they're really reacting to is this thing. They just don't really realize that's what's wrong. And that's something, that's a skill that you either you have or you have to spend a lot of time develop just learning it. How does it actually mean? And getting to the simple little thing that's actually wrong takes a long time to learn.
Really good advice. Great. So the last couple of questions we have from my Q&A are, any networking tips and the biggest piece of advice you have for someone entering the industry? Because I know a lot of people stress how important networking is, getting out, meeting people, shaking hands, and so on. So we'll pair those two questions together and start with Rich.
Well, In the interconnected intraweb world in which we live, it's actually easier than ever to network with people, which is great. And whether you're following someone's Twitter account or jumping on their Facebook page, I'm not condoning stalking, but I think developers are a lot more open these days, and they're a lot more accessible. And you know, if you see someone who gives a great interview at an E3, it's more often than not pretty easy to track them down and figure out, you know, how you could get in touch with them and just ping them. So I think that's one way you can go at it. There's other, you know, things like going to, there are actually, you know, like game dev drink ups that happen in some cities. So you can actually go there and meet people. So, or maybe even going to like a Gama Sutra, you know, or going to a forums of a game. So there's lots of different ways to depending on, you know, what your style is. You know, do you want to do a face-to-face, or would you rather, you know, contribute in a forum and get noticed that way? Or would you rather, follow someone's Twitter account? I think there's a lot of different ways that you can, you know, sort of meet the developers of titles that you're interested in and companies that you want to follow. Now, in terms of advice, of how to break into the industry, I will admit that when I first joined, it was a lot easier because the gaming industry was still seen as this sort of, garage oriented, bunch of geeks in a closet, you know, rolling dice to figure out how, to do a saving throw on a character. And so it wasn't sexy or cool yet,
Mm-hmm.
And so I was lucky enough that, you know, me cold calling, was a good enough way to get foot in the door. Now there are entire college courses dedicated to it. You know, there's internship programs that feed into into the different positions. It's a lot more competitive. But one of the things that I did was, since I knew that I wanted to work in the industry and that I didn't have any experience, right? And that's something that's always tough, right? How do you get that first job when everybody wants you to have experience? And again, I knew I wasn't technically minded. You know, I said, okay, what is it that I can do? I play games, and I knew how to describe them. I knew how to write about them. So I actually just started working, you know, unpaid, just doing reviews on different game sites. Mm-hmm. You know, and I called them up, and I started getting myself so that I actually had a portfolio of published game reviews. You know, and I had all the people that were saying, yeah, these reviews are helpful, and they started asking me to do more and more. So in addition to all the other research that I did and the marketing, you know, experience that I had, when I called Sega, I was able to say, look, here's how passionate I am about doing this. Here's yep. where I went above and beyond. And, you know, for the last 6 months, I've been working to show that I actually can do this that maybe not everybody else can. So, I'm not saying everybody needs to be published online or be a game reviewer in order to get a position in the industry. But I think the point here is, figure out what it is you want to do, and then figure out a way that you can stand out. And, you know, mm-hmm. that might be building a mod, that might be, you know, organizing a gaming club, that might be making a fake commercial using Legos. I mean, whatever it is, when you think about the industry and how competitive it is and how many people are going to probably offer, you know, a similar skill set to you, how do you, A, stand out? How do you, B, show that you have that passion and that creativity? So figure out what it is, and go above and beyond, which shows that, you know what, I'm dedicated enough and serious enough to do X, whatever that X might be. Mm-hmm. And that's why you should take a look at me.
Great. Alex?
I will give a similar answer again. I apologize.
You really
I should have rotated.
You don't like the fact that I'm going first.
Well, you're actually saying a lot. I have a slightly different. I had a slight variation on what you were saying. I was worried you were going to go further and go this far. But
no, I'm about to. What were you about to say?
Networking. I think... In this day and age, there are a lot of tools out there that aspiring in gamer people who aspire to work in games can get. I mean, going back to Unreal Tournament 2004,
yeah.
There's a whole mod. There's all the tools that are there for you to build your own games. So even if you're a producer, for instance, you can produce a game. You can produce an independent game with a group of people that you network with. So go online, find people who are also passionate about making games, get together, form a little mini company, and in your part time, make a game. Find an artist, find a designer, find an animator, find a programmer. Use the tools that are out there. And I've said this to a lot of people. You know, I work with QA a lot. And there's often people in QA who are already technically in the industry, but they want to break out of QA and get into game development, and they want to be designers, or a lot of times they want to be designers, and I'm like, well, the best thing to do is go and design something,
yeah.
and go build it, and show that you're passionate enough that you're in your spare time going to go actually build something, and then you have your own portfolio. And so if you're breaking into the industry, if you can show up at that, if you can get your foot in the door and have an interview or talk to someone at a game developers conference or mm-hmm. a game dev drink up, and we do have those here in San Francisco.
Having one right now yeah. at this table.
I think there's one tonight, or it's every Thursday night or something. If you can show up and say, like, you know, as an artist, I would actually argue it's somewhat easier because you can say, here's my portfolio of art. It's awesome. The person who sees it, if they like it, will immediately say, wow. But for other positions like design, producers, animators, animators, you can also show great animation. But showing it in-game is a huge step, and there's no reason why you can't go out and for free get these tools and start building your own games. And maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you'll design a game that's an independent game that gets bought up by a publisher and they put it out and you broke in the industry on your own. Mm-hmm. But either way, if you can show up in an interview, pull it up on that. We have video screens with computers in our offices here where we interview people. We've had people come in and they literally bring up videos and say, this is a game I built in college. This is a game I built after college. This is the game I'm building right now. And that, I cannot tell you how important that is for someone who doesn't have any experience to be able to show how passionate they were. If they're that passionate that they're going to go build games on their own, you know when they come to the studio that they're going to build games because they want to.
And I think some people are afraid to start that because they think they have to do it on their own. So what you were saying is really important. You don't
network.
Have to do everything to make a game. You know, like yeah. you said, put the call out, find other people that are looking to collaborate on something. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be the artist and the sound designer and the programmer and design everything. You know, so it's important to note that collaborate early on also.
And that's part of networking. If you can find people that are also passionate, you can network with them and build something really cool.
And Fred, surprise us with something new again. You're on a roll.
He shouldn't have to go last.
I will say it with a southern accent.
I would.
I'd say, you know, they kind of covered it, really. It's just get out there. I'd say also one thing that kind of turns off the networking is when someone talks to you and then you quickly realize they don't know what they're talking about.
Oh.
So that will crush your networking skills immediately. So my advice for networking is if you are interested in art or animation or production, make sure you have some knowledge. You've looked it up. You've done some research. If you don't know, it's okay to ask questions.
Yes.
I say that's where some people really fail on the whole network thing is they think they should know a bunch of stuff. And if you're starting in the industry, you really don't know anything. So it's okay to go, hey, tell me about this. Ask those questions when you go to these events. Because honestly, if we're there, we'll usually tell you all the dirty secrets.
So. You'll walk away richer with more information than if you had just kind of guessed at stuff. Great.
Absolutely. And show up in full cosplay, I think, would be my last thing.
For me. No.
You just, you know, come as your favorite gaming character, just dressed up to the hilt.
Hey, it is a way to showcase passion.
That's what I'm saying. If you some people wear a suit to an interview, some people wear a suit of armor,
armor. Yeah.
Suits are always creepy for some reason. Everybody here freaks out when you see someone in a suit and tie. You're like...
Yeah. So there's another piece of advice. You don't have to wear a suit.
Yeah.
On to some community questions. So these are where people get really specific, and they were all, I must say, very excited to get the opportunity to bounce some stuff off of you guys, so I appreciate that. The first one is, we touched on this briefly, where do you guys fall on the education versus experience argument? And I know, Rich, you touched on this a little bit because there didn't used to be curriculums for this sort of thing. So if I'm going to just let you guys, when it comes to the community questions, just kind of jump in if you think you've got something to share. But do you think education and a degree is imperative, or is it more about the portfolio?
Alex, go first.
Rock, paper,
yeah, Alex,
scissors.
Go first this time
speed
so that
round.
Rich can.
It really depends on the discipline you're in. I think in some disciplines, it's probably less education and more portfolio. But some of them require a general education. Like I think, you know, in marketing and in production, it's very hard to break in without some education because they want to make sure you know how to read and write and have some collaborative skills.
Yeah.
Is that the bar? You want to make sure you know how to read and write.
I always say education is about learning to learn. Learning how to learn. And if you have a good education, you've proven that you've learned how to learn. And when you come into this industry, there's a lot to learn, and it's always changing, so you have to show that you've learned how to learn. So, but for something like a programmer, it used to be a great programmer. Almost never, like when I started, almost none of them had ever graduated. They all were tinkerers
and self-taught.
And that's actually changed over the years because now programming is such a team effort. It used to be a single person could do so much in the engine, and now it's such a team effort that the education people get at university and at different trade schools is they learn how to collaborate with other people and write code in a way that's collaborative and object-oriented.
I'm going to chime in on that one. Actually, I had a team at EA that was made of mixed. It was half self-taught and half school-taught. Probably the best team I've ever worked on. Yeah, because it was amazing how each person came at it at a different way.
Yeah.
And so it wound up coming with a very unique way of approaching problems because the self-taught guys would come at it one way that the school guys hadn't and vice versa. And it actually wound up getting a very interesting solution to problems that probably neither side would have came up with. So it is an interesting middle ground, but you know, you do need school, obviously.
Yeah. Some sort of education, whether it's formal or
at least reading and writing.
Only if you want to work in marketing, right? Yeah. Thanks, guys.
I said marketing and production.
Yeah.
For the record, which you've done both.
Being able to identify colors, that helps too.
Well, I won't go on to that.
I totally agree. Now it's my turn to agree with you guys. I think number one, it's changed. You know, the bar has kind of gone up again as the industry gets quote unquote sexier and more competitive. More and more people go and actually get a degree. So what used to be the case where, okay, if I have a degree, that is what makes me stand out amongst the other job applicants. Now that's no longer the case, right? So in some ways it might be just, you know, cost of entry. But I also agree that it depends on the role. you know, certain ones can place more importance on that education versus, you know, being able to, as Alex and Deakman said, come and show, hey, here's my portfolio, here's what I've already done. You know, so I think what you could probably do is look at it as, if you're in high school, you know, and you're thinking, okay, maybe I want to go to college, maybe I don't, do the things now that you're passionate about, you know, get yourself in a position where you could, you know, showcase either a game or something that you've done. But, you know, in the back of your head, don't write off college, because you may find that either what you've done, you know, isn't quite enough just yet, or that it's a prerequisite to get the role that you want. Mm-hmm. So there's no harm in trying, but I think for the most part, you should expect that you're going to need at least some kind of formal training before you're going to be able to get your foot in the door in most cases.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So this next question comes from somebody I actually know, and she wanted to know, how do you get experience in the industry when every job requires prior experience? So this is something I see a lot of people struggling with, and I feel like some of the discussion points that you guys touched on, such as taking initiative and doing stuff, not waiting, is important. But anything else you can expand on with that?
Internships.
Great. Yeah. Look for internships.
Work in QA. There's often you can, if you show that you love games, you can come and work in QA. And then when someone, especially if you're in dev QA, someone will be walking around saying, I need someone to do this thing. And if you can volunteer and maybe get your foot in the door that way and get a little of experience on the team.
It'll also give you some insight into how studios work and run.
Absolutely.
So make sure you're signing up for what you want to do later.
And if you can survive QA, then you can survive anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I've heard that.
Yeah. I really think it would go back to a lot of the points that we made earlier, which is, you know, obviously education helps, but doing your research, showing your passion, taking that initiative, that to me would actually stand out more against, you know, if I'm evaluating two candidates and one of them has some experience and one of them doesn't, you know, if the one who doesn't can say, look, here's what I've done to demonstrate how passionate I am, how much I want to work in the industry. Here's either, you know, something that I've made or something that I, you know, thought up, or, you know, reviews that I've written, or a club that I created, or a team that I worked on to make a game, or, you know, something like that, in addition to saying, hey, you know what, I do read the gaming news. I am up to speed on what's going on in the industry. I am on all the websites. Yeah. I do subscribe to these magazines. I do play games to see what's out there. You know, I live and breathe this industry. You know, that to me would in many ways, and you know, obviously there's some exceptions, but in many ways I think that can also be just as good as experience, because, you know, to our earlier points, you can teach a lot of technical things, but you can't teach passion, you can't teach drive, you can't teach that spark and that willingness to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, and that's something that I stress too. I have a lot of people that ask me a similar question, and I say that throughout college, you know, I did my coursework and I checked all my boxes, but then, you know, in my sculpture class, I made a Chocobo Mog sculpture and a Nintendo Warp Tube sculpture, and then in my senior ethics class, I wrote my paper on video game legislation. So it's like, you can check your boxes and make sure you're, like, you're training yourself well, but then also having those things that showcase your passion and taking those making opportunities for yourself rather than waiting for them is huge. I have a girlfriend who actually wanted to write for a video game magazine, and she wasn't having any luck with any openings because it's kind of a narrow field at the moment, so she literally made her own gaming magazine. She printed it and everything and had people do subscriptions. And it was a small magazine, but, I mean, it was very impressive. She designed it and everything. So making your own opportunities is huge.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so we'll move on to the next question, which is, what's more important, being good at a lot of different specialties or being really good in a few? This particular person says he wants to work in art, but he wants to know, should he have like a basic understanding of, he said, programming or like a secondary focus, or should he just focus in on one area?
Yes.
Yes.
And what I mean by yes is, if you are just a specialist in one area, you tend to really limit yourself.
Yeah.
On top of that, let's say you do not have a basic understanding of just how games are made or how it's all done, and you only know one thing, you're really going to limit yourself even more. Having a broader, you know, a lot of the artists who come and work here also understand how memory works, how the game is done, how all that stuff actually gets put in.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are great to work with because you don't have to sit there and handhold every single time. I have worked with a couple of people 10 years ago who, great painters, great artists, had no concept of actually how
implementation and stuff.
Yeah, and it was after one project with them, you're like, thank you very, very, very much. I can't work with you anymore.
Yeah, okay. Do you have anything to feedback in?
I agree with that. At the same time, I think the word split is a strong word.
Yeah.
I think if you are an artist and you want to be an artist, it's really good to get an understanding of the other fields, the other types of people and individuals and what they do. But you really do want to focus on what your skill is. So you don't want to someone who's half good at art, half good at programming. It's going to be a little harder to get a job because someone's going to hire you as an artist, or they're going to hire you as a programmer or an animator or a designer. But like, I totally agree with Fred that having an understanding, a deeper understanding of how that fits into the overall team, because we keep talking about this as a team. If you understand, if you took a programming class or two, that's awesome because you're going to have a much better understanding of what they're doing and how things work. If you're doing half programming, it's going to, it's probably too much.
Yeah.
But okay. No, I agree.
And one thing you need to realize is that, and when every game starts, the team's small.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just doing your one job. In fact, you're going to be doing three or four until the team builds up. And if you have somebody who can't do anything else, you tend not to want them on your team. It makes it hard on everybody else.
Okay, Rich.
Yeah, I definitely defer to these guys. From my perspective, sometimes on, for example, PR or marketing or branding side, being a specialist is absolutely fine, right? You don't have to know how everything else works necessarily. But what I do think you need is an understanding of how your, discipline relates to those other disciplines.
The
and I think
ecosystem.
That would, yeah, yeah. I think, and I think yeah. that would pertain to the production side as well, or the development side. So, I agree with Alex in that. I agree with Diekman as well. But I think from what Alex was saying about, focus on what you want to do, what you're mm-hmm. passionate about, what you want to be good at. Don't feel like you have to build up your knowledge in every other area, because you don't want to gamble wrong, right? Maybe they don't need an artist/programmer. They need an artist/UI guy, right? But if you understand art and then you understand how does art, just a little bit, interface with programming, how does it interface just a little bit with UI, how does it interface just a little bit with audio, if you can understand where you sit in the gaming ecosystem, I think that that's really important. And again, I think that works on the brand side as well. So it's, what do? I do want to be a master at my trade, but I also want to be sort of a little bit familiar with everything else. Unless you want to be a producer, which, these guys all
then
know.
Then you don't have to know anything.
Yeah, we've all been producers. Well, you don't have to know everything about everything, but you need to know something about everything.
Yeah.
You just have to act like you know everything.
So you don't have to be necessarily a double major, but focus on your specialty, what you want to do, but then, do some reading up, talk to people, understand how you fit in the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
Great. This is a funny one that I actually get asked a lot. Is it common to work on a game you don't like? And
yes.
How do you deal with that? I feel totally spoiled. My first out of game journalism, I ended up on Tomb Raider, so I'm kind of lucky.
I would say, I'll just speak from my experience, is that 85% of the time when you first start in the industry and probably your first couple of years, you'll be working on games you do not want to work on. And if you can get through that, you're going to be awesome.
And so don't turn down opportunities, because you need that experience. You're probably not going to end up with your dream game at first.
Yeah, because the studios making your dream game have a lot of people knocking on their doors. So if you're trying to break in, it's unlikely you're going to get into one of those top-tier developers. You're going to be doing a port or doing a licensed game, maybe kids' games, which actually there's one of the ways I've managed to... I can really get into whatever game I'm doing. You find the cool part of whatever game you're doing. You figure out who your audience is. So if you're making a kids game, for instance, maybe it's not a game you want to play, but if you've ever watched kids do a play test and playing your game and they like it, they freak out. They're so excited. They jump up and down, super enthusiastic. And you can get that can be really, really fun to see and get into. And so you can almost any game you're making something that's supposed to be fun. So you can usually find a way to get excited about it and get into it. And then, if you're breaking into the industry, you may be doing a game that isn't that what you would normally play, but if you can get into it and make a good game, then eventually you'll work your way up into a game area you want to be in.
Great.
I'm really glad you said that, Alex, because I was going to say almost the exact same thing. And I seriously was worried that it was going to come across as like the marketing-y, PC mm-hmm. answer, but... one of the things that I, have enjoyed is that you literally do have to find that nugget. What is that center? What is that great thing about whatever it is you're working on? Because, nobody regardless of whether they're working on a port, regardless of whether we're working on a licensed game, a 10th iteration or a new IP, whatever it is, nobody, I don't think, who really is passionate about working in the industry starts off by saying, all right, I just want to build the crappy game and go home. You know, everyone is doing something that they think is important. So you need to find that, right? And if you're getting your start in the industry, be excited about that. Just right off the bat, you are working on a video game.
And
you know, that's enough to be excited in the industry and in your day-to-day life. When I have a stressful day, you know, and I go home and I'm like, oh my God, dude, it's not a great day. I'm like, wait a minute, but I was having not a great day making video games. Okay.
Yeah.
I can deal with that. You know, nobody died on my operating table, right? Yeah. So I think find that thing that you really can take pride in and take pleasure in and enjoy. And just about every game has it, whether it's to Alex's point, you know, just watching the audience's reaction to it, or whether it's saying, hey, you know, I'm working on a port, but I'm going to find a way to make this a port that really, really stands out. That's when you can get over those, you know, that little bit of a, okay, maybe this isn't necessarily the first project I would have chosen.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, can I throw something out there, is that I've been doing this for a while, and a lot of times you're working on a game that isn't that great. And you know it's not great, but you're making it as good as you can. And then you'll be surprised because you'll talk to someone else in the industry, someone who's maybe way more experienced than you or worked on way better games. And they're like, yeah, I played your game and I really like this one thing about it.
Yeah.
Like, that was really cool, the physics in your game, or this one fighting move, or this one level. And you're like, yeah, that was the thing I worked on.
That
and I really put my heart and soul into it. And you'll be surprised. I mean, a lot of people, especially experienced people in the industry, have worked on those games, and so it's not a, you know, badge
it's
of dishonor. No,
right.
people realize you don't always get to pick and choose what you're going to work on, and so you make the best of it, and so does everyone else, usually.
Well, one thing you'll also never know is the little nugget of information you'll pick up from working on that. So it's kind of goes back to the education thing. Is I've worked on some games that didn't like, but I picked up two or three things that, like, if I'd never worked on that game, I never would understand X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And then you can use that on something else you build. And
so
then
it's a continuing education.
It is. And then you go, oh, yeah, well, we can just do this. And people are like, oh, that's a great
genius
idea. And it's like, yeah, I'm glad I did that.
Yeah, and you know what? Just about everybody, you know, with the exception of a few very lucky people.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, but, you know, she's one for one so far, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Wait,
I am also somewhat at the beginning.
Wait till she works on your guys' new IP. Then she'll be like, oh, now I'm only batting 500. I'm joking. Their IP is awesome.
This would be a very different
No, but I mean, you know, everybody in the industry has that story, right? And that's what it becomes, you know? In some ways, some of my best stories that I tell at the Game Dev Drink-Ups come from some of the most frustrating games that I worked on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know the
one
I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
I got an understanding.
Everybody's had it, so nobody's going to judge you, right? Nobody's going to be like, oh, you came from that team. Yeah. They're going to be like, yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Actually, you say, what was it like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, share war stories. All right, great.
True.
We have two more questions to go from the community. What are the best cities to work at when it comes to the game industry? I think we should trade best for hubs, places that people are going to kind of maybe want to look at. Because chances are you're going to have to move if you want to work in the game industry. There are more studios popping up all over, and you also have the opportunities working indie. You can find something local or working remotely. But what do you guys find some of the bigger places, hubs to work at?
Well, you know, I think actually, given the way that the industry is moving and, you know, how so much is, you know, digital and people can telecommute, you may not have to move, right? You may be able to get a contract position, or you may be able to work at a studio that's close. I actually originally thought that there weren't that many gaming studios unless you were in, like New York, LA, San Francisco. But they're all over the place. What do they say?
New York.
Did I say New York?
You said New York. Are there a lot of Rockstar?
Well, yeah.
But then you also got Austin, Boston,
exactly. So
like Santa Monica.
Almost any city you look at has.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, the big ones are San Francisco.
The big ones are on the coast.
Seattle,
yeah, absolutely.
Montreal.
I think you have to figure out, you know, you can also say best in some ways. You have to figure out what's important to you, right? Like, if you want to work in a rural area, there may be a studio, or you may be able to work out of your house. But yeah, definitely if you're looking at working at some of the more established, bigger ones, you're going to need to look at a major city, and more often than not, you're looking at the coasts.
Yeah, there was not much in Minnesota. There was an Activision value. That was it, I think. So I knew, I made up my mind early that I'd end up having to move somewhere. But yeah, so those are some of the big hubs. Montreal is definitely becoming a huge hotspot for gaming. I think probably like every person in the city is somehow tied to one of the big game industries up there.
And there's an ebb and flow. I mean, some cities like San Diego will seem like, oh, there's a lot of studios, and then a lot of them will sort of die off, and then they'll come back. Mm-hmm. And
Austin
is definitely
the same way.
Yep.
There's a lot of talent there, and studios will rise and fall. There's San Francisco, Seattle, Vancouver also is one that's had some ebb and flow recently. But yeah, Montreal is huge. There's some of the biggest studios in the world are there. But also overseas, I mean, Tokyo, Paris, the UK has a bunch of cities with places all over Europe.
There's a bunch of big studios in parts of Germany, too. They've got lots of big publishers.
And Brazil has a bunch of studios.
Great. Cool.
Denmark. So is our answer basically anywhere
everywhere,
in the world?
Yeah.
Is that what we're...
No, well, there's actually... I should link to it in the notes. There's actually a website that has game dev hubs, and it shows the size and scale and the amount of studios there. So that's something worth looking at, especially if you're... Again, if you're looking, you want to eventually end up in one of the bigger dev houses. Might be worth looking at.
But I think starting out, because I think this is sort of angled towards that. If you're starting out, it's probably a good idea to be willing to move.
Yeah.
I've had to move. I've lived in San Diego and Los Angeles and Chicago and San Francisco and a lot of different places.
All around. All different types of weather. Okay, so final question is this is kind of like a looking forward, a bit speculative. What fields do you see becoming more important in the future? This was a question that was asked by a couple people I think are like in high school or maybe just starting their college career, and they want to know if there's some sort of like specialty or something upcoming that they should keep their eyes on and maybe they could be ahead of the curve.
5D technology. Seriously, it's going to be huge.
He's just sitting here smiling at all of us.
I'm just joking. I have no idea what 5D technology was.
Neither did we. That's why we all just stared at you.
You know, I think it depends on, what sort of discipline you want to get into, right? I think on the brand side, I'll let these guys handle the dev side, but on the brand side, it is definitely a lot more about how interconnected can you be, right? So you may want to specialize in PR or in marketing, but you definitely have to have a very good understanding of, you know, social trends and, you know, user generated content and community building and maintenance. So I think it all actually just comes down to understanding how people are going to engage with your content, how they're going to take it and make it their own. And then how they're going to share it, right? And how can you encourage them to do that? So, you know, learning how to create evangelists, learning how to let go of your brand and let other people have fun with it. It's not really a field, but I think more and more, you know, marketing is going to need to feel like it's one-to-one. It's going to need to feel like it is, you know, you giving, gamers what kind of messages they want, you know, when they want it and in the medium that they want it. Yeah. So really learning, you know, to understand, you know, those kinds of things, I think is going to be critical.
Yeah, it's really interesting starting to see the social media management and community management curriculums popping up, because it's funny, like people say the last couple of years, you're not a social media expert, there is no such thing. And now they're starting to like get to the point where there are those established best practices and teachings and so on. So that's definitely, I think, something to look at also.
And 5D technology.
And 5D technology. In 4 years, you'll understand what it is.
TM.
Right? How about you two? Got anything?
That's a really tough one.
These are for the really proactive people want to anticipate something that will help them stand out.
I would say keep a watch on really where the technology and trends going. Don't lock on to any type of bubble, because I know in this industry we've seen too many of these bubbles pop.
Yeah.
Like, this is the answer, and then
it's not the answer.
People spend all their time in it, and then you realize the thing blows up and it's gone. So I would say there's probably no one really good thing, but watch out. You know, keep your eye on, I won't say everything, but you know, if you have a certain area, if you could keep your eye on everything, that'd be awesome. But if you do have a certain area, being console gaming or social media or whatever like that, watch the current trends, but also watch the other trends that are kind of creeping in, because there are certain things that people think, oh, that's never going to catch on, and it blows up, or something could be really, really hot now, and then your parents use it, and then everybody goes, oh my God, I'm never going to touch this again.
Never again.
Yeah, so it's just being aware of what we all have to do that here on a yearly basis. We're always looking at what's new, what's everybody going for. So
yeah. You have anything? You look like you're thinking really hard, Alex.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I'll throw some ideas out. I know that we always have a hard time finding really, and this has been my entire career, finding really good effects artists.
Yeah.
People who are really good at generating special effects, and that we have people on the team that's their full-time job is doing effects.
Mm-hmm.
So they know how to handle particle effects and do all sorts of, it's like a tech artist meets an artist, and they have special effects abilities. And I know that's one that we never have enough of. So I don't see that ever going away.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're always, it's like movies, you always need special effects.
Yep.
We used to always have a hard time getting really good animators. I don't know if that's as true anymore because there's a lot of animation.
UI.
Yeah, UI.
UI, we have one.
It's very hard to find really solid UI artists who are also very technical.
Yep.
And UI is a big part of a lot of games, and understanding usability is part of that.
Yep.
So there are people who are good artists that can do good UI, but they don't necessarily know how to design or lay out UI in a good user-friendly way. There was one other that I was...
You're basically making
cameras.
This like a job wreck.
No, I'm serious. No, but camera specialists. There's a lot of... I think there's people in the traditional film industry who are really understand cameras, but we have, like, especially on Tomb Raider, where cameras are so important. They were really, really important to establishing the mood and the feel of so many of the moments in the game. And I think there's always going to be games about storytelling, and so understanding cameras, technology behind cameras, how to use cameras, and it's way bigger than just pointing a camera at something. There's a whole bunch of details to camera mastery.
Nuance.
Yeah,
it's going to become more important.
I think so. So I think if you are a big film buff, but you also like video games, and you think you could learn how to use cameras, that would be something you could specialize in and get your foot in the door. Because I know studios are often looking for that.
You know what? Right? I'm gonna throw one thing out here, and let me know. I think this kind of builds on what you were saying about the camera, Alex. You know, as technology continues to improve. You know, I think it becomes less and less of a revolution and more of an evolution, right? Because you eventually reach sort of the pinnacle of the graphic fidelity and the AI and the size of the world. And I think, you know, we could have an entire podcast of, you know, gaming as an art form, right?
Yeah.
And some people say yay, some people say nay. I say yay just for the record.
I think we're all going to say yay.
I think we will, yeah. But but I think that, you know, people who not just understand camera and framing, but just understand interactive storytelling is a huge thing because it's so difficult, right? If I go to the movie, I see a one-way experience that represents someone's vision that I, you know, at least right now can't really interact with and engage with. But being able to tell a story in a way where I can actually influence what's happening, I think is critical. And you know, I just finished playing Last of Us a little while ago. I'm getting ready to jump back in and play it. And literally, I consider that one of the best written gaming experiences I've ever had. And, you know, you see a lot in the industry where they go out and get a writer, you know, from a movie or from a TV show. And we bring that talent in, you know, where we get comic book writers, right? We bring that talent in because we're desperately trying to figure out how do we take... you know, an interactive art form and make it a compelling story.
Yeah.
And so I think if you could actually get to the point where you could write for a video game, not necessarily be a person like, yeah, I write great movies, so I'm going to try and take that talent and turn this video game into a movie-like experience. But if you actually had that understanding of here's how you write interactive storytelling, interactive fiction, you know,
I think some of that agency to the player and they get
just in general, just understanding how interactive storytelling works and how to craft a great story when it's not in your control 100% of the time.
That's,
I think that's key.
That's usually the first thing we say. We were in a couple of design meetings early on in this game where someone go, oh yeah, and then this happens, the player watches this, and the first thing all the designers go, why can't we just play that?
Yeah,
and then so we would actually go, well, you guys, and then we'd build a rough mock-up. They're like, oh, I guess we can play this.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's understanding that it's like, how do you make a story that you can tell by playing, not by watching?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be nice to see more of that.
I've worked on games where we bring Hollywood people out, and they're like, all right, in this scene, this person dies, and the person takes their jacket off and puts it over, and they have no idea
how hard that is
to have a character take a jacket off, all the cloth sim, and lay it over. And if you're doing it all in-game, you just can't do that. So, and I've worked with a couple of really good writers in the industry, like a guy who does all the writing for Splinter Cell, and they just have a very different understanding of what writing for games is. But I don't know if there's a lot of, I don't think there's any curriculum for that, but maybe there is.
There's not, and that's why I'm saying that I think that right now it's all about, okay, how can you be the master of pushing graphics or the master of pushing AI? Yeah. And so if, you know, could be wrong, but I'm saying as those things not hit a ceiling, but again, as each leap forward becomes less of a leap and more of a step, I think that the next logical, you know, area that people are going to say, okay, here's how we can really
push the
make a difference would be in that space.
My favorite games now are all storytelling games.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that is some fantastic advice. We will, like always, have this transcribed in case you guys want to listen or revisit at a later date. But thank all three of you for being here. I appreciate your advice. And hopefully we'll be able to have you guys back on at a later date when we go into the specialties. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to close out the podcast, as promised, speaking to Lindsay McQueenie. We have not had you on the podcast before. You are our lead recruiter. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Figure it's important in a podcast about getting a job in the game industry to kind of talk to some of the specifics, things that are good to look for on a resume and so forth. But first, do you want to just share a tiny bit about what you do here?
Sure. I'm the lead recruiter at Crystal Dynamics, which means I basically run the recruitment team. Anything from university relations to setting up internships when we have those, mm-hmm. to looking for full-time employees, all that good stuff.
Awesome.
I visit a lot of schools and I go to a lot of conferences and speak at different
get
events.
Get out there and try to get people. Yep. Into Crystal.
That's right.
Awesome. So we'll start with some of the basics. What are the first things that you notice about a resume? And you can kind of go into the do's and don'ts if you'd like.
That is a good question. I would say the first thing I look for actually isn't what's on a person's resume, but whether they have a portfolio and what's in there. I think the most important thing to remember when you're applying for a job in the games industry is that it's what you can show and not tell, you know, what you can actually do.
Great.
Because anybody can say that they're a designer or they have good ideas, but it's only what you can actually prove out that would be useful to us at a company. So that's probably the first thing that I notice. You know, as far as do's and don'ts go, I mean, I've done multiple conferences regarding this, and I could probably talk for hours about it. But you know, there's a couple of key things that seem simple enough, but people always seem to forget. You know, one is do your homework and you know, proofread your resume.
Yeah.
Make sure you're not applying to the wrong company. That happens all the
time.
We
get that a lot. We get the Dear Crystal Dynamics or Dear Blizzard Entertainment.
Dear
or
Blizzard,
I wanted to work with you all my life.
Yep. And then I send, I'll send them a response saying, well, good luck at Blizzard.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that works out for you. When you're applying to a company that, you know, this is your first impression that you're going to give to them, and it might be the only impression that you get to show them. So, you know, make sure that your portfolio is as complete as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Your resume is proofread. All your links work. You know, you're sending samples every time. You know, is the problem these days is that a lot of companies use automatic tracking tools for their candidates. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, once they hit that reject button, you're in the system as rejected the entire time. So, you know, this is not to say that you would never get a second chance, but just make sure that your first chance is the
best
chance. Right.
So what about cover letters? Are cover letters still standard, or is it mostly just the resume and the portfolio at this point?
You know, that is probably up for debate between different recruiters. I personally think that cover letters are fantastic. You know, somebody is going to look at that cover letter, whether it's me or the hiring manager or a lead or whatever. So that's your chance to really talk about what makes you special beyond your resume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people will have the same skills if they've gone to the same schools or whatever. or you know, looking into the same discipline, but your cover letter is where you say, you know, this is what I bring to the table that's different than everybody else. This is why I'm interested in your company. This is why it's the best fit for me. So that's your chance to, you know, say what you always wanted to say.
Be personable.
Right. And that's where your personality comes through too. It's definitely not gonna your resume.
Yeah.
It's just a resume.
Great. So this is one that I think people may be in fear of, but it's a good thing to know. Are there any instant disqualifiers, things you just look at and you're like, this is not going to be a good fit?
There's a few, yes. I think one big one is probably applying for the wrong position or multiple positions.
Okay.
You know, it's important to understand what your level is, what you're capable of, and, you know, it's important to know what you want to do, also have a good idea of that. I mean, you can apply to more than one job if you want to, but people are looking for sort of specialists in a particular area rather than someone who just wants to be whatever they can be.
Yep, yep.
And I'd say the other big things are, you know, again, show, don't tell. If you're applying for an art position and you don't provide me with any art samples, most of the time I'm not going to spend the time to ask you to send those. I'm just going to say no portfolio, you know, moving on. And then also, again, you know, proofread. If you're applying to Blizzard and not to Crystal Dynamics, then, you know, I'm assuming you're applying to Blizzard, and
yep,
I'm just going to pass right over that one.
Okay, great. So this is something that I know is talked about a bit on the web. Do you do social media research on the candidates? Are there things that you need to look out for?
There are things you need to look out for. I personally believe that, you know, people's personal social media sites like Facebook are their own, and what you do in your free time is your own,
mm-hmm,
and I don't care. I'm not going to look you up. But, you know, again, the reality is that that's just me. You know, a lot of other companies look into that stuff. A lot of people who are just, you know, who want to work with you and are just nosy about your background might check you out. And, you know, the thing to remember is that anything you put out on the web, no matter how hard you try to protect it, it's out there for public consumption now,
yep,
and anybody can find it. So whenever you put anything out, just make sure it's how you want yourself to be represented.
It's representative of,
yep,
you.
If your mother found it or if your boss found it, you know, think about these things before you put them on.
What would grandma think about this post?
Exactly right.
Just keep
exactly
her in mind.
Yep.
Great. All right, so after you've submitted your resume and your cover letter and so on, and you've scored an interview, what do you think are the tips for a good interview here or just generally across the industry?
I mean, you know, these are just tips for any time you apply for a job, but, you know, the first thing you'd want to do is be prepared. You know, do your research on the company that you're applying for, you know, have a good understanding of the position, you know, research the person that you're speaking to, you know, find out what excites you about that person or, you know, what you can learn from them. And then, you know, just keep practicing. Practice a lot before you have your interview. Especially for people who are, you know, new to the industry, not everybody gets the chance to, you know, receive some training or tips on that. So, you know, interview with your friends, have them ask you questions. You know, it's always good to ask somebody, like, is there anything I need to be prepared for the interview?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, send a quick email to someone out there in the industry that you respect and say, you know, I know you don't have a lot of time, but if you could you check out my portfolio? And, you know, just ask questions and practice.
So do you expect most of these interviews to be like mostly a one-way conversation with you asking the questions, or do you want applicants to be asking questions also?
Oh, you should always be prepared to ask questions too, because that shows that you know, you're genuinely interested in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes it can be hard to come up with questions on the spot, but that's another reason why you should be prepared. You
mm-hmm.
know, what is it about the company that you need to know that would sell you? You know,
to make sure they're a good fit also.
Right. It's a two-way street. So I'm interested in what you can bring to us, but you should also be interested in how good of a fit this is for you. You know, not every job is the right fit for every person.
Great. Okay, so you actually mentioned a word that is dangerous. Not dangerous, but everybody wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have internships at Crystal? Because I get emails about it all the time, and I would love to give them an answer.
Fantastic question. I'll say we're working on it. We do have positions right now that are more entry level, and they are like temp to perm positions, meaning, you know, our expectation is that this person would come in on a temporary basis, work full time with us, and then if they're a good fit, we would transition them to full time. So that's probably the closest we have to internships, but those are usually reserved for people who are already graduated.
Yep.
We are working on an internship program. You know, as soon as I have it up, it'll be right on the website for people to apply to. But, you know, those take time. So.
All right. So I will make sure to shout that from the blog and the Twitter and so on.
Yes.
Because I know many of you listening are very interested in potential internships. So other than internships, what sort of positions do we have open at Crystal right now that you'd like to highlight for people out there?
All kinds. So first, you know, going back to the internships, it's always okay to ask, even if I don't have anything up, mm-hmm. you know, I could maybe give you some insight if we're getting closer to it. So feel free to ask those questions. But regarding our full-time positions, we have a pretty wide range right now. A lot of leadership positions in the area of like production and art. But then, you know, for the more entry-level folks, we also have those temp-to-perm positions that I mentioned, you know, in design and in art again. So, you know, there's a lot of availability, engineering. We need pretty much everything. We've got great. Two projects now, and they're early on, so yeah. We need people.
Great. So I have a couple of questions from our listeners.
Okay.
One of them was asking about an age minimum. Now, I assume we would like adults, 18-year-olds at a minimum. But are there any sort of restrictions on age as long as the talent and the qualifications there? If you have someone right out of high school who has a portfolio and they've been programming since they were five, you know, is that a concern?
Yes, I would say so, mostly because of the content that we produce. I mean, our games are mature rated, mm-hmm. so we would expect the people who are making them to be the same age or older.
Yes.
That said, you know, depending on the type of internship, it's totally feasible that a rock star or high school student could get one if yep. we had one available. But in general, anything that's, you know, producing content for the game would probably be 18 and older.
Okay, great. And then our second question was, are there any sort of special limits or requirements from people that are coming from abroad? If someone's interested in applying for a position here in regards to visas, English tests, mandatory degrees, and so on.
Well, so we're, you know, lucky enough to be a part of Square Enix, which is a large corporation, and they can support us in the area of visa sponsorship. And that's something we're certainly open to for the right candidates. Usually the limitations aren't ones that we impose on people, but the ones that the government imposes. So depending on where you're coming from and what type of visa you're applying for or what type of year or what time of year it is, you know, these are all bullet points that we'll have to check before we can consider. So it's sort of a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, every visa requires a degree, typically. Mm-hmm. And in the area of the position that you're applying for. And then the more experience you have, the more likely you would be able to get a visa.
Great. All right, well, that wraps up my questions. Anything else you want to share with people that are interested in applying or any other tips or advice?
I mean, I think, you know, just keep your chin up and, you know, think positively. The industry, once you get into it, is very small. So, you know, make sure that the friends you're making out there and the people that you're making mods with or the, you know, the team members you have at school, you know, these are going to be your best resources to getting a job in the industry. I mean, I'd say the number one way to get yourself noticed is through networking. Mm-hmm. Your portfolio can be fantastic, but if it's one in 500, who knows how long it'll take to get there.
Yeah.
But if you have that one friend who can pass it along to the recruiter and say, this person's awesome, like yeah. that's really where it's at. And you know, the jobs are there, so just keep at it and, you know, learn from your mistakes. And, you know, even rejections are a good opportunity to learn, so mm-hmm. ask questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me. I'll be back.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I hope you found the podcast useful and that now you're armed with extra advice for getting your start in the game industry. Remember, you can submit your own questions to community@crystald.com. Until next time. Thank you.